Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium Aquarimax topics.
Hello.
It's been a while.
Yes, we're back this week. Thank you for waiting for us.
Kelly put a notice on the Facebook page, but not everybody got it because...
Not everybody's on Facebook.
And that doesn't really work anyway these days. I mean, Facebook doesn't give it to everybody.
Because Facebook is naughty.
But anyway, we're back. We weren't feeling well enough last week to get it done, but now we are. So, sorry for the wait. Here we go.
So, we have Tony in New York and Carl in Florida, Mick in Carnforth, UK, and Matt in Perth, Western Australia, and JR in Eastern Kentucky.
And because of the hiatus, some of you have contributed more than once, which is great.
Yeah.
We're glad for it. So, on we go.
Okay. So, we've got Tony first in New York. First, he sent us a video of... well, he says, here's my latest documentation of the new fish room setup, a water storage bin used for aging water. Hope it helps someone on the path. So and we'll put the video up.
We've added that to the Aquarimax Contributors playlist on the YouTube channel for Aquarimax. So please go check it out. And thank you once again, Tony, for your contributions. They've been pretty popular. Lots of people are checking them out.
Yeah, they've
been useful. And have given positive comments on them. So thank you again for contributing that. They're definitely helping people on the path.
And we have an email from Tony also.
Yes, we do.
And he actually has a few comments for Matt in Perth, Australia. He says, I wanted to talk about drilling your tank for a sump. Here's what I know about it. Normally, a tank has to be drilled dry or close to dry. Drilling in place on a stand is not recommended. There are videos online that show how to drill a tank for those that are very brave. Other thoughts? If it is not easy to drill the back, could you drill the side? I have an older tank that I want to get drilled. Transporting it to the shop would be difficult since the tank is large. I am considering the removal of the side pane since I can transport one small pane of glass with ease. After it is drilled, I can re-silicone it into the tank. The whole tank would have to be resealed.
Hmm.
How do you remove a side? I mean, aren't they all... How do you do that? How do you remove
the
side?
You have to remove the silicone. It's not an easy thing. You've got to get it with a razor blade in there and
wow, that sounds kind of intensive.
Well, it's not the easiest thing in the world, but moving a big tank is
not the easiest thing in the world either. So
it can be the easier thing. Good suggestions.
Okay, he goes on to say, my thoughts on the marine tank. Right, in a pinch, you could use an airstone in a marine tank, but this is hardly ever done. I believe that one reason would be that the airstone moves the surface more and creates more splashing. In a marine tank, splashing means more salt creep.
Excellent point.
That is a good point. Tell us about salt creep. Salt creep is...
Ah, you mean me, I tell you?
Yeah.
Ah, salt creep, okay. Well, basically, salt that gets on things... And sort of a wet, you know, when salt water gets on something, some of it drips off, some of it doesn't, some of it evaporates, some of it doesn't. And pretty soon what you have is this
crusty
stuff that forms, but not only forms, but it continues to accrete. It grows
like
and spreads.
Stalactites.
Yeah, something like that. And it will grow and spread across surfaces on the tank, damaging the glass over a long period of time. You know, it will kind of leave... marks in the glass that won't come out easily.
Is it going to pit it?
And and it can form on plastic and can form on almost anything, and you know, in or around the tank. And if it gets out of the tank and falls on carpets or, you know, it can damage so many different things because it's salt. So it can damage metal especially, but lots of other things as well. And it's not pretty to deal with.
Well, that's a good reason then. He says, a power head is a better idea for all the reasons that Russ stated. In addition, the coral makes use of the water flow in order to eat. I'm not sure if you talked about it, but also the coral needs very specific light for a long period every day since they are, to one degree or another, photosynthetic.
Also a good point.
Yeah. Finally, I have to say that your new tank looks absolutely incredible. I was also interested by the Placo discussion since I'm possibly taking one in very soon. This Placo is of an enormous size, at least 18 inches, and so it may have to go into the 100-gallon. I must try to find out which kind it is. The former owner said, I think, that it was a Chinese algae eater, but, you know, that could mean anything. He's got a winky smiley face.
Yes. Right, and I think in this case it does mean anything. In other words, I don't think it's an actual Chinese algae eater. I've seen fairly big ones of those, but never anywhere near 18 inches. Mm-hmm. So
he says, keep swimming, everybody, and keep bubbling, JR. So, from the CO2, I guess. Yeah.
Exactly. Excuse me, my throat's irritating me. Just one moment. We can carry on. I'll be right back.
Okay. We'll go to Carl in Florida. He says, thank you for the advice. I had lowered the photo period down to 6.5 hours to combat algae, so now I will try the siesta period. Remind us what we had been talking about. I mean, plants and stuff. Remind us what we had discussed already with Carl.
Well,
it's been a couple weeks.
His tank was suffering from an algae issue, and we talked about a couple of things that he might think about, and one of them was to introduce a siesta period and increase the photo period, but add a siesta period or a pause during which it is dark in the middle of the day.
Okay.
Which can give the CO2 a chance to build up in the tank and the plants a chance to use it, but algae is not particularly fond of siesta periods.
Okay.
So it can be one, you know, weapon in the arsenal against algae.
Okay, so he says, I had lowered the photo period down to 6.5 hours to combat algae, so now I will try the siesta period. And of course, quit delaying the introduction of the shrimp into their permanent home. Thanks again, hope all is well. Did he send a picture too from his other note here?
Yes, and we'll put that up.
Okay, he says about the picture, this is 3 days growth of the algae. I am removing it manually now. Inhabitants are 3 otters and 1 cherry shrimp at the moment.
Okay.
So,
looking at the photo, 2 things struck me. And I do think at this point manual removal is good, it's necessary. But I think there are, looking at the type of the algae and looking at the types of the plants that I can see, mostly, as I recall in the picture which I have looked at, I think I saw mostly Java fern in there. And I'm sure there are some other plants, but the number and the biomass of the plants and the speed of the growth of just the Java fern and so on are not going to be enough to combat that algae. And there are too many excess nutrients available to the algae is my initial assessment. I mean, you know, without an exhaustive test, battery of tests or anything. But that's what I'm looking at, and that's what I'm thinking. So, sorry about the chimes.
You'll know it is time to turn the page.
And you hear the chimes ring like this. But, yes. I do think that you might want to cut down on nutrients in terms of fertilization for a while you're dealing with the algae. And what do you have in terms of fast-growing stem plants in the tank? I think you might need some. That's my idea. Maybe even some that float at the top, let them put them in there so that they can be nutrient sponges for a little while and maybe pull them back out if you want to, once you've got them going. But putting the shrimp in was a good idea, and maybe a few more shrimp. I'm not sure the otters are going to attack that algae very much. They probably won't. But the shrimp, especially if there are multiples of them, will probably do some of that for you. So there's a few things to think about, but yeah. Definitely. I might even try just not putting any nutrients in there at all, or food, and just let the shrimp, you know, put a few more shrimp in there, maybe even relocate the otters for a little while, and let the shrimp do their thing without feeding anybody or putting any other nutrients in, and see what you get.
Okay.
That could be, including, but continue the manual removal, definitely.
Sounds like a good thing to try.
That would be one thing I would probably do in that situation.
Okay. So you can let us know how that goes, too, and how the siesta period works.
Going.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Should we go to Mick?
Yes.
Okay. He sent us a escaping fish story.
Oh, yes. I remember this one.
Yes. Okay. He says,
asked about them.
We did, yes. He said, send us funny stories. On the subject of great fishy escapes, I will tell you about a zebra loach, Botia striata. Several years ago, I had a community tank in the living room containing 3 of these great fish. I had decided to do a concerted clean on the tank, which involved removing a large piece of bogwood. The whole thing took a couple of hours and looked much better for my efforts. Having cleaned up my equipment and settled down on the settee to enjoy a cup of tea, suddenly, flip-flop, ping! From under the cabinet, one of the zebra loaches was making its way across the carpet looking very dry and fluffy. I picked it up and placed it in a net in the tank, thinking that the end was indeed nigh. After about 30 seconds, it was swimming around and lived on for many years. It must have been wedged in the bogwood and been out of the water for well over 2 hours.
So, that is quite a survival story. escape/survival story. And I think it wins the most evocative onomatopoeia award of the day.
Oh, yeah.
With the flip-flop ping.
Flip-flop ping, that was pretty good.
Yeah, it fit well. Yeah. So...
he says, hope Russ has his voice back to normal soon, which you do now.
I do now, most of the time. A minute ago, I had a bit of a frog in my throat, but I'm doing okay.
Maybe you had a fish in your throat.
That could be. Maybe it was a frog fish.
Flip-flop ping.
Exactly. So I'm glad that your zebra loach managed to get through that, none the worse for wear. And thank you for sending in that story. We hope others will continue to send in other fishy escape stories.
Mm-hmm. They're kind of amusing. Okay, we have an audio message from Matt.
Here we go.
In Perth, Western Australia.
I'm going to pull that up.
Okay. And I think, do we actually have two?
We have two.
From him, but this is the first one.
This is the first one.
So, because it's been a couple weeks, so we've got two.
Mm-hmm. And
we'll let that one play, and then we'll get to the second one later.
Well, I hope it works.
Here, I will hold the speaker up.
Okay. Well, let's see if this works.
Should I just pause it? How do you pause it?
You put that. Okay. Had a little bit of a technical difficulty, but I think we're ready to roll now. Let's make sure the volume's up all the way. And here we go, playing Matt's audio file.
G'day Aquarimax, this is Matt from Perth, Western Australia. I sometimes forget all the questions I've asked you, so I'm just going to reply to all the ones I could remember. I think Russ asked about the nitrate level in the 2-foot by 1-by-1 aquarium. It's zero, as is the nitrite level, and the ammonia level hasn't changed, so not entirely sure what's going on there. I'm using a system.
So it looks like we didn't get all of Matt's message, but we did get some of it, and he mentioned that the nitrite and nitrates were both zero. So, yeah, that is interesting. Now, of course, marine aquariums are different in a lot of ways with that. The live rock, one of the things that live rock is supposed to do is, to instead of leaving nitrate in the water, which happens in a some freshwater systems where there aren't plants pulling out or different things like that, we try to keep the nitrates to zero as well in reef aquariums, but it's done in various ways. One of them is through the live rock. There are bacteria inside the live rock where there's very low or no oxygen that can take the nitrate and change it into nitrogen gas, which is then bubbled out. We also have photosynthetic organisms that use up the nitrogenous wastes and through photosynthesis, so that can help it there as well. But since you don't have any of those in there, I'm wondering if it's the live rock doing it. But if there's measurable ammonia, I would say it's likely that it's not, the cycles aren't working yet, because at least in freshwater, the second set of bacteria that turns the ammonia into nitrite can't do that until... Or no, the second set that turns the nitrite into nitrate can't do that until there isn't really any measurable ammonia in the tank. In other words, the first set of bacteria has turned it to nitrite because the ammonia is too toxic for them. But they can handle the nitrite and use it. So my suspicion would be that the cycle has not yet completed. But it is difficult to tell for sure, but that would be my suspicion. So hopefully, we can figure out what happened to the rest of the message, but we're going to go on to Matt's next message now.
Hey, Corey Max, this is Matt from Perth, Western Australia. Just bought myself a new Blue Yeti high-end USB microphone, so hopefully I'll sound nice and crystal clear on this thing. As for the aquariums, unfortunately, the disease that I mentioned in my last audio message with the discus has spread to the rest of them. The one that was sick at the time has died. Luckily, it took him a long time to die, which means I've got a bit of time to react to the current ones who are sick. Only one of them isn't eating. The rest are just showing the signs on my gills, but they are still eating. So I've decided to bite the bullet and invite a fish veterinarian to come over. It's going to cost $250, which is a lot, but that includes his fuel money to get out, professional water quality testing, and running a skin sample test of the cells that are inflamed to see exactly what is wrong, and then they can prescribe the right antibiotic or antifungal to take it out. I'm really hoping he comes up with a solution, because I do not want to lose the rest of those fish. Total value of the fish is certainly more than $250, particularly if you consider their value when they get older. And they're very nice looking fish. As for the discus and their growth rate, I know we were talking about the size of the tank recently, but I think it's also nutrition has an impact on growth rate. And I've been feeding them frozen worms, which is the only thing they eat. They don't eat flakes. But I think I need to do some more investigations into nutrition, because I think they might need some better nutrition than I'm giving them at the moment. I don't know. But in some happy news, the 2-foot marine tank is still looking great. I'm loving it. The blue-green chromis is showing no signs of distress. He's swimming around, having lots of fun. He's missing a little bit of scales on one patch of him, but I think that's just because he probably was pushed up against a rock at some point. I don't think that's because there's a big problem with him. And you can only see it at night time. You can't see that when the lights are on. So I've been treating with stability for a whole week now. I've rerun the water tests and still got zero nitrates, nitrites, and ammonia is still very low. So I'm just going to assume the stability and the really cultured live rock has done its job. And I'm going to start introducing more livestock. I'm not going to introduce it fast. I'm going to keep an eye on things. If any of the livestock show signs of distress, I'll start doing more frequent water changes and all that kind of thing. But I think I can move forward now. I'm also going to get a protein skimmer, called a Tunzi 9001. It's the smallest nano skimmer they do, and it will be plenty for this tank. And one thing I do like about it is, aside from the fact it's really small, I've looked at videos on the internet and it's very quiet, and it also has a surface skimming attachment, so that means that all the stuff that builds up on the surface will be sucked down into the skimmer, and it should keep the tank looking nicer. So I'm going to grab that, and then once I've got that, I'm going to get a pair of clownfish and an anemone. I know I said I wasn't going to get an anemone before, but I think with a skimmer and some careful observation, I could keep it all right. I'll just, you know, keep testing that water quality, make sure I don't overfeed them, all that kind of thing. And then probably some more corals as well, but none, no SPS. I'm not going to try and get anything more advanced than my anemone, and we'll just see how it all goes. So yeah, that's looking pretty good. This is more of an update than a question, but if you have any comments, they'd be appreciated, and hopefully in my next audio message I'll be able to tell you what was wrong with the discus and my success story of treating them all, and then we'll be happy again. Plants look great. I'll talk to you guys later. See ya.
All right, well, that's
I'm so sad they're sick.
Yeah, it's discus are beautiful fish, and it's hard to and expensive fish, so it's hard to hear when they're having a problem like that, especially when they were doing so well. But I do hope that we hear soon from the vet, see what the vet's able to say.
I think it would be really interesting to hear a nice detailed account of how that goes. I mean, I've heard of fish vets, but I don't think there is one around here. We haven't had any personal experience with them. I would find it very interesting to hear about your experience with that and what you think of it and how it goes and everything.
So. Yeah, and hopefully the good news as well.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah. Like you said, success story.
But however it goes, we would like to hear about it. And it does sound like they're going about it in an exhaustive, appropriately an exhaustive way so that they can determine what's really going on. So that will be interesting. But what you mentioned about nutrition I perked up my ears there. I think that's, it could be very valid because frozen worms...
Well, nobody can grow without the proper nutrition, right. So that makes perfect sense.
And frozen worms are, you know, they can be a very good component of discus diet, but they can also, they're usually not quite balanced. So that may be a thing. And I know that many discus keepers are very careful about, you know, they'll build their own foods. I know that over the years, various ones have become popular and unpopular. Like, for a long time, beef heart.
Really?
It was a very popular one. Not just beef heart itself. Sounds
messy.
But they would grind the beef heart and they would mix in other things. They would make like gelatin food with
the
beef heart.
And we thought it was a pain-making Leadbeater's mix for the sugar gliders.
Yeah. It might have been comparable in some ways to what we used to do to make for sugar gliders, but in terms of, you know, mixing the ingredients,
we don't have any. We don't have them anymore, so we don't make it.
That was quite a while ago. But you'd have to. Oh, the beef heart, they would freeze it with other ingredients, you know, mix in vitamins and gelatin and different things.
Interesting.
And they would eat it, but the problem is, at least some people say now that because fish are not particularly adapted to eating terrestrial fats that are usually solid at, you know, the temperatures at which the fish are acting, that it can be bad for them.
Well, that makes sense.
But anyway, the nutrition thing... there could be some things that might help in that direction. And discus can very much be picky fish in terms of what they eat. So that's another issue that you run into. They'll eat certain things and you have to kind of balance that with what they need and what they will actually eat. Kind of like little kids. We have that problem sometimes.
They're getting better.
Yes, they are. But the youngest one sometimes still has issues with that. Another thing that you mentioned about your marine tank. Yeah, that is a still sounds like that issue with the ammonia just still being there and everything else being low. I'm not sure what's going on, but if you're being really careful with water changes, as you say, you know, that then that makes sense. You're going to try to I don't know what else you can do with at this point except for wait even longer, but it sounds like since your Chromis is doing all right and everything, that as long as you're proceeding slowly and continue to monitor everything. I mean, the protein skimmers are, I think, a great addition. That should help a lot. And as long as you've got the proper lighting for the anemone, that should help. Anemones are tricky. The only anemones we've really had experience with keeping are the naughty ones. The ones you're not supposed to have.
The ones we don't want.
We used to have Aptasias
Aptasia
in our saltwater tanks. Until we got peppermint shrimp to get rid of them, but
he found them quite delectable.
Yeah, he really cleaned them up. But yeah, that's what I would say. It'll be interesting to see how that goes. Hopefully it goes well, and as long as you've got plenty of lighting and the soft corals. I mean, there are quite a few of them that do well in lower lighting than like a bubble tip anemone does. So if you go in for some of the things like the leather mushroom coral or something, which can be a good host for clownfish. Or, you know, the star polyps and the zoanthids and things like that, or the mushroom corals. We had quite a few mushroom corals, and they reproduced well for us. In our tank, we had Kenyan tree corals, and we had a couple of different kinds, maybe two or three kinds of mushroom corals. Coralomorphs, as they're also called. We had zoanthids, and we had star polyps. I think that's about all we had in terms of corals in there, but it was fun. I really liked having those corals. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that progresses. And I'm sorry we missed the last part of the first message, so hopefully...
Yeah, I'm not sure what happened with the...
Yeah, we just didn't get it all, but we're just having luck with...
Having a bad tech
technical
night.
Issues tonight, yeah. So...
Anyway, not just with the podcast, either.
Technical issues with everything. Yeah.
It's time for that... station break thingy when I tell you how you can play an active part in the Aquarimax community. If you want your questions or comments featured on the show, send us an email at info@aquarimax.com or call and leave a message at 801-477-0629. You can also subscribe to the Aquarimax YouTube channel, like our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter.
And now for a blatant but extremely brief plug.
Our ebook, The Aquarimax Guide to 7 Easy Live Foods, is available on Amazon.com for $2.99. Okay, well, we have an email from JR in Kentucky. And he says, well, it's been an interesting couple of days. Late Friday into Saturday, I again started to see a large amount of citric acid being used up and transferred over to the baking soda side. Past experience told me that once again I must have a leak somewhere. Even though I had in the past checked all my fittings for leaks using a soap and water solution, I figured it may be a good idea to check again. On one of the forum posts on plantedtank.net, a user suggested using a bottle of children's bubbles and a foam brush. Work up a lather around your fittings, and if the bubbles grow, you know you have a leak. That's clever.
Mm-hmm.
Sure enough, I found leaks on both sides of my solenoid valve. Out came the pipe tape and wrenches to redo things. All better now. That's good. Hopefully it sticks, because that's got to be a pain.
Yeah.
Since I'm not really sure how long the leaks had been there and what effect they may have had on testing different mix formulas, I decided the best thing to do was reset the benchmark and start over. So on Saturday, I refilled the bottles with the original mix. Bottle A has 200 grams of citric acid and 600 milliliters of water. And bottle B has 200 grams of baking soda and 200 milliliters of water. I will let you know how it goes.
Hmm. Well, that's the best way to go about it, to keep it
documentable.
Mm-hmm. So, sorry to hear that it messed up again, but we're glad to know that back on track, and hopefully it works out well. We'll look forward to hearing how it goes. Maybe it will make it more possible to get, the sort of output you're looking for.
Yeah, that would be good. Okay, last thing, we actually have one more from Tony in New York. He says, hello, Aquarimax. Just quickly wanted to highlight my favorite siphon. Right, no need to drink fish water. Woohoo! The one I like is from Topfin, and I sincerely love it. I have purchased many, and it is worth every penny. Couldn't be easier. Drop it in the tank, squeeze, and siphon starts. No drinking fish water, no immersing the whole thing in the tank and trying to keep it plugged. Very easy. And he put a link on there to a place where you can get it, so we can put that up.
Yeah, we'll put that link up there.
Yep. And he says, until next time, make mine Aquarimax.
Well, thank you, Tony. That is a good idea to highlight the brand that you like. And we will definitely put that up there. I like that kind, too. I've used the bulb squeeze type.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first time I saw one, I was so excited. I actually got it as a present.
That seems like one of those things
neighbor,
where, like,
I think it was.
The sun ought to come out from behind the clouds and you hear the choir singing.
Angelic choir.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. I was a kid at the time, and I got it for my neighbor, who was also my friend, who was a budding fish keeper, and I was, you know, getting him into fish keeping, and I got that for him and showed him how it worked, and I was amazed and really wished that I could get one at the time. And of course, later I got something like that, and it's really nice to just squeeze it and go. It's
nice.
Lovely. I like the kind also that you just jiggle in the water. But the thing is, you have to jiggle them
down a little bit.
You have to put them basically all the way in the water. So in a shallow tank, it doesn't work as well. If you know the tube goes
too,
you have to kind of put it sideways in the water and shake it. And when I teach people how to do it, they can't get it the couple first times, and I have to show them, you know, like this, and then you know do it sideways and everything. So the one that Tony is demonstrating is definitely easier to work with.
Cool.
So. Thank you.
Alrighty, folks.
And next time, we really hope we have fewer technical issues. But whether we do or not, we'll be here.
Yes. So, in the meantime,
may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629. Or email us at info@aquarimax.com.